Thank you to the sponsor of today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world. Taking place in the world known as Tamaris, team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction. Arrange your city as you see fit and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle with a variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder rocks, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. And please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magical artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So, if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Fan.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with being a Dire Straits fan. I just have never met a person who's a Dire Straits fan.
I just, what?
You mean every father in the world?
Yeah.
What Dire Straits, like, what's their hits?
Money for Nothing. Chicks Money for Free.
Sultan's a Swing.
Oh, yeah. Sultan's a Swing. Love. Actually, yeah. What am I saying? Sultan's a Swing is definitely the most.
Sultan's
fun.
Of Swing? What are they, like a ska band? What's happening?
Have you heard Sultan's of Swing, Chad?
Oh, my God. Chad, you know that, like, meme of, like, that kid from Arthur who puts on the headphones and then, like, he's spirited away by musical notes? That's what listening to Sultan's of Swing for the first time is like.
When you hear the guitar lick on Sultan's of Swing, you're going to be transported.
Okay. I was just saying, I only know them mostly for Money for Nothing, but because Weird Al covered it. But it wasn't really a parody song. It was just, he made it about Beverly Hillbillies, who do get money for nothing.
It's weird because Money for Nothing is kind of a, like, ironic, like, jokey song criticizing, like, it's like a joke. It's a hat on a hat. It doesn't seem much like it needs a parody version of it because it's not taking itself seriously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's why it's weird that Weird Al decided to make a non-funny homage parody song.
Maybe it's really fun to play because, like, probably. I know Mark Knopfler's musicianship is much admired.
It just, UHF was really a big chance for Weird Al to, like, jump into the mainstream.
Cement his legacy.
Yeah, cement his legacy, and it's a goddamn hilarious movie. It holds up really well, but just, for whatever reason,
there's like a 2 minute Dire Straits Money for Nothing music video in the middle of it while George falls asleep. I'm like, you could have put any of your other songs. You could have put I Lost on Jeopardy. Yep. You could have put on Frank's 2000 inch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky instead of Mickey, which is, you know, like, there's just so many other ones that would have been more of like, this is an example of what Weird Al does.
I kind of always liked his original tracks more than his parodies, if I'm being honest.
I did always enjoy when you could tell that it was one of his hot hits. But I will say that the music video for that parody was baked right in. Didn't have to worry about anything. And maybe that little mental offloading was what he needed in that moment, Chad.
Sure, yeah. Maybe it was really hitting the time. Kevin, I agree with you. Some of his originals are the best. Frank's 2000 Inch TV, an original. Just a great song.
Why does this always happen to me is like, it's got Ben Folds on piano and harmonies.
Oh, shit. What's that?
Why does this always happen to me?
That's a good one. That's a good Weird Al.
It's not the Since You've Been Gone one.
No, it's an original.
He's got great. This is my problem with the very, it was a very good job with that weird fake documentary biopic movie. Mm-hmm. But it completely ignored, in both joke and seriousness, that Weird Al makes very good original songs.
Yeah. Charles Nelson Reilly, like, that's great.
The Night Santa Went Crazy and Christmas at Ground Zero, two great original Christmas songs.
Albuquerque?
Oh my God, Albuquerque. I used to, in my heyday, I knew every line of Albuquerque by heart, and that is in a 12 or 14 minute song.
That'll take you a long way on a car trip, knowing all the lyrics to Albuquerque.
Parents love it. Parents love it when you just start saying it rapidly.
What's the one where he talks about tearing the wings off of flies? Those were the good old days, right? Is that an original?
Yeah, the good old days. Yeah.
I think those were the good old days.
Oh, is that an actual song?
No, I don't think so.
I think that's a.
I'm trying to find it. I can't find what album it's on. I'm over here.
I know. Yeah. What is it?
I think it's on the bad one. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. It is. And it. It's a style parody of James Taylor. It is not. It is an original song.
Whenever I see like a dumb like movie clip or Breaking Bad clip on TikTok or whatever, and they've got the Gangster's Paradise like bass boosted or whatever slowed down in the background, I'm like, it's weird that they put Amish Paradise in there.
Oh man, how did I forget? Dare to Be Stupid, such a good Devo, like, it made Mark Mothersbaugh mad.
Mark Mothersbaugh.
So sorry. I just wrote it. Dare to Be Stupid as a better Devo song than most Devo songs.
Wow.
Wow. Yes. Okay. That's not true.
Yes. Dare to Be Stupid, so good.
It's not that.
It's so good, and it makes perfect sense that it was randomly in the Transformers animated movie.
You know what's funny is, Chad, you and Nick Murphy have a lot in common in that you're both people that enjoy music that is funny a lot.
And you guys are not.
Well, I listened to nerdcore for like 15 years of my life. Man.
I just think that music's good enough. It doesn't need to be funny too.
I'm a big Fountains of Wayne fan. That's like quirky music.
I don't mind
a witticism or a funny twist or whatever. I like comedy.
I would go more They Might Be Giants. I'd rather listen to
That's quirky.
Yeah. They Might Be Giants is funny.
They're funny, but I feel like you like the parody aspect of it, I think.
No, I want to defend myself. I think the parody is my least interesting thing. Yeah.
Yeah, as you're saying, you actually prefer his non-parody song. So, I mean, that's not entirely true, but I just find that interesting because Nick is very into like the Lonely Island stuff. And I've always been like, that's fine, but I don't need to have a story. I don't know. I don't need a story told to me while this is going on. I'm, you know, like.
I like MC Frontalot, like, a lot. Like, he's kind of why I'm doing whatever the hell this is.
You talking about this podcast?
I'm talking about this life.
Life? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
When in my early 20s, I watched the MC Frontalot documentary, and there's this scene where he throws his back out going on his first, like, national tour, and he's, like, 35 or something like that. And he throws his back out in the middle of nowhere, and it's like he finds a random chiropractor in the middle of nowhere, and as the chiropractor's cracking his back, he's looking into the camera, and he says, I wish I hadn't waited till I was 30 to do this. And then I'm like, yeah, I better get going.
Wise advice.
I like MC Frontalot, and he has a good, like, he had a good comment on this, like, in one of his like many skits on his albums, because Nerdcore did that for a while.
And well, Rap and Rap also loved skits too.
Rap loves a very good non sequitur sketch.
The 90s were rap skit time. You listen to any like classic 90s rap album and you're like, all right, guys, enough of the skits. There's enough on here.
Yeah. By the way, none of y'all very good comedy writers, but it seems like you're having fun. So you know what? I'm not paying you by the minute, so whatever. Get this in here, I guess.
Yeah. The Wu-Tang ones were funny, but scary.
He's doing a bit with Kristen Schaal about the meaning of life.
Cool.
And she says something very inspiring, like, if you're here and you want to create things, then maybe that's the meaning of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Frontalot responds with, so it's possible I was put on Earth to make rap music that's routinely mistaken for novelty songs? It's like, yeah, absolutely.
See, because he skirts the line of the novelty song, though.
I think there is a line between like what the Lonely Island is, which is novelty music.
Right.
And yeah. I think probably self-described as novelty music.
Yes. I think Weird Al is certainly not novel. I mean, there is a certain element of novelty music to his music, but I think
he definitely started as novelty music.
Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But there's a musicianship to Weird Al and his group. I would defend the Lonely Island only in that whoever they have making a lot of their beats, some pretty good beats. Like, mm-hmm. This removed from comedy could probably be a top 40 hit if they wanted it to be.
Yeah, but it's not fucking Andy Samberg making those beats.
No. I imagine it's, yeah. I imagine they have some bunch of New York people that do all that. Yeah.
I wonder if they would be. I really would love to hear a song that is a purely sincere song from them. Because I'd be interested.
Well, I guess I mean like music lyrics. If you took away the lyrics away, I think a few of those could be like, yeah, you just change these words, be a little bit more about like palpable to Midwestern audiences. And, you know, like I don't know, Go Kindergarten is a fucking jam. Like that's a good song, just minus the lyrics.
we're also like on the line of is pop in general novelty music,
mm-hmm.
which makes us sound a little pretentious if we put it that way. But pop kind of.
No, I mean, well, there is a certain amount of it that becomes novelty music because it becomes like a. Like there are pop songs that transcend into the canon of great all time music, right?
Yeah,
and I think that there are Weird Al songs that have done that.
But when pop transcends the canon into great all time music, it becomes a different genre.
So you're saying pop as a sound, like it gets pop, big.
Yeah. I mean, pop would be impossible, I think, to limit to a specific sound, right? Yeah. What even is pop music? You know,
it's music that plays people rather than music that is played by people.
Did you make that up or is that
I think that's Eno.
Okay.
Smart. I'm not sure though. The future Kevin will know when he edits this episode. Good luck, idiot.
I don't know, Dum Dum. You probably heard it on a YouTube short because you're too coward to put TikTok on your phone. I don't know who said that. Don't blame Eno for your problems. I love you. Bye.
Fly of the Conchords, some great original songs. Sometimes funny.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely novelty music.
Tenacious D, some fucking sick metal. Like, I think some of their songs, some of the best rock songs I've heard in the last couple decades. I don't know.
Well, that's because they kind of are, like, putting on a lot. Like, they straight up play Smells Like Teen Spirit and Kickapoo.
Well, sure. But, like, Jables seems like an actually good guitar player.
I'm not taking anything away from any novelty musician skill set. I truly believe that they're incredibly talented people. I just think that when I'm listening to a Weird Al thing, there's a certain like layer, mental layer that goes over the top of the music that I'm like, I am having a laugh right now, and I'm not here to transcend into whatever music does to your brain. You know,
I don't think I can like passively listen to novelty music.
Cut to Chad just driving around all the day in his car just listening to random Weird Al tracks going and then like singing along with having a good old time.
That's okay, that's great.
Cut to Kevin with his record player tenting his fingers in front of his face and like solemnly nodding his head to Tenacious D, being like, yes, I am fully present in listening to this.
Wait, what about how do y'all feel about musicals? Because I feel like musicals have similar
I can't I'm not a musical person. Well.
I'm damaged because I used to be a theater kid. So
yeah, it's just like I don't need to like I don't need the pomp and circumstance. I could just listen to a song. I don't need all this. I don't need a story.
I mean,
sometimes a song does tell a story and it's great, but I don't know. I don't know what I'm
talking
about.
Paul's all about the vibe. It's all about vibe.
I am an ambient.
Yeah, Paul's like, I want to listen to instrumentals only. Get these lyrics and words out of here.
I just want you to play something good.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Singer starts singing, and you're like, boo, stop talking, shut up and let me hear the music.
That's how a Lucky Boys Confusion song starts. Anyone out there listen to Lucky Boys Confusion?
I haven't listened to them in a long time.
No, it's been a long time.
Fuck, man.
Dude, I'm surprised you didn't listen to them. They got some ska in them. Chad?
Oh, yeah, they came up a little bit. They weren't one of the more regular rotations, but yeah, I heard them a little bit.
They're great.
You know, it's a really good band I like to listen to and love their lyrics is the band Polaris.
Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, we were talking about that before you, while your Discord was...
We already talked about that.
God damn, I spent half an hour waiting for Discord to connect, so catch me and the audience up. Welcome to Goosebuds.
Welcome. Hello, I'm Paul.
I'm Chad.
I'm Kevin.
Chad, where do you think that the Polaris voice, the... where do you think that type of singing came from?
I mean, wasn't that kind of popular in the 90s at the
time?
It was. Blind Lemon and whatever.
We were saying, like, maybe it started with Dave, but Dave was like... Dave Matthews started in 91, and he wasn't popular until at least 95, like, widely popular until, like, 94, 95.
When was Nirvana?
Mental note, Paul is on first-name basis with Mr. Matthews.
You called him Dave earlier.
Honestly, we kept saying Dave. I was like, Dave Grohl?
That's a much better Dave, for sure.
Yeah, I wish that was the go-to Dave.
I mean, yeah, what about Nirvana? Because, like, I feel like Kurt Cobain was kind of popularizing that, like, slurred a little bit. Like, you kind of, like, moan.
They were far more widely popular in 91 than Dave Matthews was.
But like, the two bands we've referenced, or the three, I guess, Polaris, Dave Matthews Band, and Nirvana, I don't
all
think
equally important.
I don't think they could be further apart.
No.
So there's got to be some root.
And
to
I don't think,
the...
yeah, I don't think Kurt's vocals were quite like that.
What about, like, Crash Test Dummies? Another band that Weird Al covered.
Crash Test Dummies. Now Chad's got his fucking
Once
music nerd glasses.
Yeah, you know that one. That was they were 91 as well. That's, you know, that might be on the cutting edge. I couldn't tell you. I don't know enough about 90s pop music. To be able to really tell you where it came from. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on it.
No, I have a guess. Well, this is something if I can share inside government secrets with you all.
Oh, wow. Please do.
There's a much popular conspiracy theory that early in the early 90s, at the edge of the 80s, George Bush Sr. was a little bit worried about the new youth voters and really wanted to slow them down a bit. And he developed a bit of a sonic attack.
Yeah.
That would just kind of slow down the conversational nature of young progressives so that they wouldn't be able to share their ideas as fast and spread information. And he targeted the musicians first because they were the cultural leaders.
Are you saying that George Bush Sr. went out with a trank gun and tranked Kurt Cobain in the throat so that he would slur his speech?
But not a trank gun, with like a little ray gun he had the government make for him.
And that's why. Okay, so that's why every 90s singer had the kind of like a thing going on.
Like Eddie Vedder. Eddie Vedder used to talk like a carnival barker, and now
But he could never get John McRae of Cake. Like, he could never catch him. He was always articulate.
Have you ever heard him sing when he wasn't shot by the control laser? Like, it makes Busta Rhymes sound slow.
Oh, he hated Busta Rhymes. He couldn't get him. Busta was constantly
was too fast.
Ducking through alleys. And moving, George.
That one hype Williams video where he's in the like suit and he's like bouncing around. That's just his regular.
Put your hands where my eyes can see.
Yeah, that's just his regular movement speed. He's not sped up in any way in that.
Yeah, Busta Rhymes is basically a low level speedster.
I'm gonna say it's Pearl Jam. I'm gonna say it's Pearl Jam. By the way, that did the voice first.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are just burning time like you think we're not going to have a lot to talk about with a 22-minute episode of Pete and Pete.
Let's talk about if you're new to the podcast and somehow you've listened to all of this and still wondering what the hell we're going to talk about. Normally we cover the YA books of R.L. Stine and other great 90s novels, but sometimes we cover TV. And one of our beloved 90s shows we like to cover is The Adventures of Pete and Pete on Nickelodeon. Yay.
This is for us.
Yeah.
Tonight.
What? This is for you especially, Paul.
This one was definitely for me. Now and then, we like to take a little breather from Stine's works. And Pete and Pete is, I'll say it right now, is our safe space. It's where we like to go to retreat mentally and feel safe and know that true love and compassion for children's media did exist in the 90s. Yep.
Even in the third season of Pete and Pete, which someone would argue is a little Pete heavy and also way too Nona heavy.
Nona, get out of here, Nona. Jesus Christ.
Michelle Trachtenberg, you're cool. But I will say that the seams were showing a little bit with some of the Nona stuff. I felt like Harriet the Spy was sneaking their way into our show here.
Was this this had to be pre-Harriet the Spy?
It was,
one
year previous.
I was watching this with the lens of like, what is it about this character and actor that made Nickelodeon go, we need to go all in on Michelle Trachtenberg?
Right?
I think she out-acts young Pete in this one.
Yeah, young Pete's feeling a little directionless, but Lil Pete was never meant to bear the weight of a serious business story.
No.
And this is kind of Looney Tunes compared to the first season of Pete and Pete. Like, everyone's kind of gone through the Flandersization process where...
Yeah, Pete's like a narrator where it almost feels like he's not, which he's done before, obviously, but...
Yeah.
Something about this one, I feel like, is Pete like 30 now?
Oh, you're talking about old Pete? You're talking about Big Pete.
Big Pete. Big Pete's just kind of like in a room talking to the camera as if he's now like a documentarian as opposed to the older brother.
He's always done that, but I do agree that Big Pete is looking older in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Artie has left at this point.
Is that where it was? I was just really missing Artie.
I think I think it's the missing chaos of Artie, and I do think that this is a strange episode for Little Pete too, because Little Pete he's lost a little bit of his mojo here because his lucky coin is dead.
I think overall this works for like losing Artie is kind of interesting for the series. It often doesn't work in a lot of ways, like. It often feels kind of like all the magic has left the world sometimes.
Sure.
But also that's kind of like what growing up is. So like little Pete not having Artie and also mourning the death of his Penny, like it kind of all seems to like fit into this general vibe that's happening in the third season of it's little Pete's turn to grow up. No, we're not interested in you, Big Pete. You're too much of a teenager now. You're not interesting to the kids. Go away, please.
I think as a kid, even though I was probably young Pete's age, I think I was still more interested in Big Pete.
They just couldn't figure, even in season one, they had to struggle to figure out what to do with him.
Yeah, I guess so.
Big Pete's great at framing the episode. I think he's an incredible narrator. I think he does a great job of adding the tone and voice to this show. Most of the stories really should focus on Little Pete, though, I think, for the audience at least.
I recently watched Halloweenies, which is a really awesome Big Pete episode.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Halloween episode, and it's sort of about like being on the edge of teenagerhood. Little Pete wants to hit the candy trick-or-treat record, and Big Pete is like, I'm too old to go trick-or-treating with you. All of my friends are going to make fun of me.
Yep, been there.
Yeah, it's great. That's a good little bit of conflict. This one is like this one's all magic, I feel. Like with a little bit of a lesson shoved in there. I don't mean to like shit talk this episode. It's really good. It's better than like, you know, 90% of TV out there.
Absolutely.
It's just the seams are showing a little bit.
The seams are showing, and I just think it really is the fact that Pete is not little Pete. He isn't able to be the ball of chaos that he normally is because he's carrying the One Ring throughout this episode. This is the this is the Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring of Pete and Pete.
And you know, which has already been established that by losing Artie, it was sort of like losing Gandalf.
Artie is yet to come back as Artie the Blue, which he comes back.
The colors on his shirt are just inverted. Yeah. They're still red and blue stripes. They're just in
different
spots.
It's more blue when he comes back.
Yeah.
I love more than anything this first shot of Big Pete walking up the stairs in this like golden like morning light.
Oh, it's beautiful.
With the dramatic music playing and everything.
And he has this cool oversized shirt, which is popular now.
Yep.
Everything's a cycle.
What I love about this opening scene is he comes into Little Pete's room and Little Pete is laying on the ground distraught, and he's like, you know, you learned about death, and death's a part of life. And I like that. I love compassionate older Pete. It's a nice moment to show an older brother.
Yeah.
On TV, you don't typically get to see siblings getting along, and it's nice to see that.
Yeah, no, it's nice that they have... It's nice to see something where, like, the two brothers aren't antagonistic toward each other. When they butt heads, it's usually over something important.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to, like, fuck with each other.
Right.
We learned that the magic double-headed penny that Little Pete owns has run out of luck.
Are we sure that it has run out of luck? But then we see, as he climbs into the top bunk, he falls through the bunk onto the bottom bunk, and he's pretty sure.
With the skill of Buster Keaton.
You're right, it was Keaton-esque.
Keaton-esque. He falls in his butt, his bed that definitely was not made of plywood just for that bit.
And we also, I totally skipped over, so we see some examples of the luck that it has brought him. It's capable of stopping him from getting splashed with cherry splurt from a can of cherry splurt. Him and his father are handed cherry splurt by the mom. And
we all know what cherry splurt is.
Yeah, drink cherry splurt.
I'm dropping the name as much as possible because it's something we all know and understand. And it splurts dad, but it doesn't splurt. It doesn't splurt Little Pete. And it's a good moment. And then I really love this. We were just talking about this
I was like, this is the exact shot that you like.
Yeah, this was so the next bit that we see is Pit Stain, the bully who hates Little Pete, has some quote Cold War weaponry, which I thought was very fun. he opens a war cooler that's been keeping a snowball cold through this into the summer to attack Pete with. And when he flings the snowball, we go to Star Wars speeder bike cam here. Yep. Chad, do you remember I recently was explaining how they did that shot, and the way they did it was they attached the speeder bike front to the front of the camera and then walked around with it and sped it up.
Yeah.
And that's all they did in this was they put the
Evil Dead shot a little bit.
Well, I think that is derived from the speeder bike shot is what I would argue.
Yeah, that would make sense. It does happen in terms of years. Yeah.
It's great. It's very Looney Tunes.
Mm-hmm. And we get a great sequence. It bounces off of a volleyball net and then slaps Pit Stain right in the face.
Pit Stain, I like him as a villain. He chews the scenery very well.
Mm-hmm.
He is kind of a less threatening version of Endless Mike Hellstrom.
Endless Mike. Endless Mike is a tremendous name.
Endless Mike Hellstrom is like insane and scary. He was sort of more of a Big Pete villain, and this is like the junior-fied version of Endless Mike.
Right
down to like the redhead slurs he shouts at one of the Pete brothers.
I do like that Pit Stain at least has a vengeance against Little Pete for dubbing Pit Stain with his own name. as a kid who sweat too much both in the past and in present, I felt for Pit Stain in this a little bit. He bullies because he feels like he is a monster in society, and he is aware that his shirt is always wet and that everyone's aware of seeing his armpits, and I understand why he lashes out.
My problem is my glands. Your problem is my fist.
A lot of the usages of the word glands, so we're also teaching kids about science here.
Glands.
There's a couple lines that I wrote down throughout this that was sort of like the shorthand for kid humor was to just drop like a scientific term that they probably don't fully understand, but they know is kind of goofy sounding. I don't remember where it falls in the plot of this story, but at some point older Pete says the spleen sucking truth. Which is just a great, and it's not relevant to spleens in any way. It's just a really great line that kind of is that it's that faux Adventure Time cursing stuff, right?
Yeah, it's the clean filth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Dwayne, that's what I call him, Dwayne Wade. That's not his name.
Wayne the Pain?
Wayne the Pain multiple times goes like, super genius. And I was like, that might as well just been Finn from Adventure
Time.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
I love Wayne, and we'll get to Wayne.
Oh yeah, we're getting.
But to like, Wayne. Oh yeah, I wanted to complain about Nona.
Well, so we get now that we've gotten the setup here, right? So the coin has run out of luck. Pit Stain is now a menace to Pete's life, little Pete's life. We are given the new credits without Artie. Ellen gets a little highlighting spot, which is good for her.
I think she had one in the first.
Was she
season?
In the first one? I can't remember.
Never enough Ellen.
Yeah, no, never enough Ellen.
No, and they try, and so Nona, played by Michelle Trachtenberg, is our new Artie, I guess, our new sidekick for little Pete. Gets a highlighting named spot in the credits.
We'll also later see Monica, who is not important enough to get a spot in the opening credits.
Yeah.
But does do a lot this episode. And also Wayne, who also does not get a spot in the episode.
Somehow, Nona is somehow crucially important to this episode, but also not at all. She's like a master of luck lore. and it's established that she is filled with luck artifacts.
Yeah,
she's got a lucky candy necklace, lucky earrings, lucky underwear. She goes lucky underwear, and she whispers, which feels like a dark secret to share.
Mm-hmm.
But then as this entire episode is about luck being drained, relying on luck, I don't know. At some point, I was kind of waiting for Nona's own like faith in luck to be challenged.
She never
gets to change really. I mean, she gets to fight Monica
about
one,
it
like,
yeah there's not yeah. I don't think a character change occurs through that, but she does get her luck, her faith in luck is shaken in that moment.
Yeah,
stupid fucking hat. Stupid hat.
I love that stupid hat. It's a good stupid hat. I have a hat very similar to that hat, which
Kevin
is why,
you would
which
rock
like
the fuck out of the hat. I think you'd wear it better than Nona would have.
Thank you. Well, I'm always down to kind of punch it that Nona as a tiny child that is a little bit annoying.
Isn't it fun to just make fun of the small child who can't fight back and isn't real?
I wonder how much of this was her idea. Like, is she just doing her best? Was there pressure from her parents? Like, what's happening with Nona?
Yes, I feel for every child actor. They're all doomed. When I was watching this episode today, my partner Heidi was like, oh, Michelle Trachtenberg, and she went on this tirade about how in Buffy, I guess Michelle Trachtenberg shows up as sort of a like Deus Ex Machina MacGuffin character where the plot is all revolving around her.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that kind of a weight that Michelle Trachtenberg just carried into her shows? Was sort of a like
Poochie, no one asked for you, Michelle Trachtenberg.
Yeah, the Poochie the dog quality sort of thing of like, I kind of take over this.
Oh no, I didn't think about that.
Everywhere she goes.
Because you're right. Because I remember she showed up, and I think she has a bit of a Wesley Crusher vibe to her as well.
Yes.
Although Wesley showed up like that from the beginning.
Yeah.
And she's so wacky, like she kind of like forces Pete into a more like boring.
She's like, making little Pete the straight man. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not sure how I feel about that, but.
Death to Nona, I'll say it.
It's basically like, basically there are four Petes. There's like,
I love that you quoted Wendy Williams about Nona, by the way.
Thank you. Death to all of them.
Yeah, you're right there. That's okay. And that's the problem is we're not seeing our beautiful, beloved little Pete. We're seeing,
we're not seeing B plot little Pete. We're seeing A plot little
we're
Pete.
Seeing
and that's sad.
A plot. Little Pete refracted into four strands of light, four weaker strands of light is the problem.
Yeah, break down these four Petes for me, please.
Yeah, I'll make you a Pete web.
Yeah, there's the true Pete, aka real little Pete, which is just downfallen Pete. It's just weak Pete. And then we have Nona, who is probably is a Loki Pete, right?
Yep.
Pure chaos Pete. What is Monica, I guess?
Monica is like competent nerd Pete. Like she's like the Pete that got the jetpack from the mail order.
Well, I think that's if she, based on this episode, if she's a Girl Scout, I would assume she kind of represents order in Pete.
Yeah, she's a Krebs Scout technically.
Yeah, I loved Krebs Scout. That's
because that's like the big mega corporation is Krebco.
Yeah, we learn about the Krebs Star flashlight later in this episode too. She's more like, she's the confidence that weak Pete, that downfallen Pete doesn't have right now, right?
Can we call him Punished Pete?
Punished Pete. There we go. Yes. Much better. Punished Pete doesn't have his confidence. He doesn't have his chaos, which is Nona, and he doesn't have his vivacity, which is the what Wayne the Pain has.
Yeah, Wayne has the energy.
His vivacious.
Wayne has the ADD.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really... So I think Nona tells him this.
Yeah.
Nona says that Pete can recharge his penny's luck if he puts it on train tracks and a train runs over his penny. That will recharge all the luck in his penny. And that's what they do. They hitch a ride over to Glert County, where Pete's mom visits the platesmith.
The platesmith,
once a month.
Which is perfect. It's a perfect moment, and they needed more platesmith in this.
One of the funniest jokes I think I've ever seen on this series is that the mom with a plate in her head goes to a blacksmith in town.
It's
for
just like
regular head repairs. It's very funny.
He's pounding out head plates outside of his shop when they show up.
Presumably, do you think he's swapping in new ones, or do you think he's repairing her current plate?
I think he pounds them right in.
It hints at an ancient tradition of head plate craftsmanship that, I think is beautiful. It adds so much to the
It's like trepanning. You have to just like hit it in at a certain angle and it goes into the head.
Yeah.
Without killing or changing the personality of the plated person.
Yeah. So they hitch a ride over to the tracks from Pete's mom over to the platesmith, and then they put the penny on the tracks. And then later, when Pitstain is kicking the shit out of little Pete and has to have his whole ass saved by bus driver Stu Benedict, who is now some sort of superhero in this episode for some reason. Like, he's like super cop.
And also, neighborhood cop, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't he used to be the antagonist of Little Pete?
No, well, I think the episode we watched with bus driver Stu Benedict, and it was when his girlfriend broke up with him.
Oh, okay.
And he made every bus drive really, really long by talking about every single place he used to visit with his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. He's found himself in a place of power now. He's found his power within his calling, which is bus driving.
So bus driver Stu Benedict says that if if Pete leaves that penny on the tracks, then the train's going to derail and it's going to go up in a fireball and everyone on the train's going
to
die.
And so Pete knows that he knows what he has to do. He knows right from wrong and that he has to return and remove the ring.
But all Pitstain gets out of this information is that Pete's penny is alone and unguarded and about to be recharged with luck.
I was so frustrated that little Pete revealed his weakness right now in his big plans.
I mean, I think Pitstain knew before. I don't know. I can't remember if he knew before this. He's aware that Pete is in pained Pete mode right now.
Yeah, punished Pete.
Punished Pete mode.
But Metal Gear, Punished Snake should be telling Revolver Ross a lot, like, oh, I'm going to get the La La Leela Lou crystal over.
I'm fine on contrivances if they save us time in a 22-minute episode.
It's fine. Just to say, Pete made a mistake. He made a mistake.
He makes a huge mistake. He did, but he does have the guardian of Stu, bus driver Stu, who gives this great line when Pete is about to be walloped by Pitstain. Stu stops him, and Pitstain is sweating. He's dripping sweat. He explains that it's hot out. It's really, he's not that he has glandular problems. It's just a hot day. To which Stu responds, I think the weather's perfect for you to take a hike.
Blam. That's almost R.L. Stein level burn.
Does he also the one who informs Little Pete about the illegality of putting the penny, which normally Pete wouldn't care.
Pete doesn't care. He doesn't care about the illegality. He's like, fuck it, I don't give a shit. But then he tells him about it's the consequences of his actions upon other innocent people, primarily their luggage, that he's concerned about.
Which is an interesting, I think, ethical morality distinction to make for Little Pete, is that he doesn't care about the law, but he cares about lives.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a microcosm of Waking Dead Divine right there.
I love that that's one of your 12 movies, and neither Chad or I have seen it.
Yeah. I don't talk about Waking Dead Divine nearly enough. That movie's fucking incredible.
I've only ever heard of this movie via you.
Ah, man. Maybe we should watch Waking Dead Divine for St. Patrick's Day this year.
We're doing it.
All right.
Sure.
All right. So the quest is clear. He marshals Monica and Nona to do the walk 10 miles through the woods to get the penny.
Yeah, this is the same day, right? Presumably, he is, not to get caught up in that, but yeah, he got a ride with mom, got a ride back.
Yep.
Had time to process, and now he has to do a 10-mile ride. I was wondering if this was really 10 miles or if it's like kid logic where it feels like it's 10 miles.
I mean, we see a map.
Maps don't lie.
Map's not to scale.
Maps never lie. I mean,
a child can walk 10 miles. We don't know if it's 10 miles by car or 10 miles as the crow flies. Whatever. It's a hike. Not quite a Stand By Me level experience.
But I was waiting for them to find a dead body.
It is certainly set up to be... We have the shot of the railroad track going off into the distance. We do a reverse shot of the three children standing on the track. And that's when Nona does her luck ritual from the old country. Which they believe, I think, is Wisconsin.
Yep.
And she performs her luck ritual. And then they set out. And then Monica is the other girl's name, right?
Monica, yeah.
And Monica is a Krebs Scout, and she has a knife with a...
Called the Viper,
which has a compass on it as well. And then we get Wayne the Pain shows up.
I love Wayne. Wayne rides the line of being annoying, but I think he's portrayed as more lovable than anything.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. They acted like he was really annoying, and I don't know.
Did you guys have a Wayne the Pain growing up, or were you Wayne the Pain?
Yeah,
I think I was Wayne the Pain. I don't know.
Did you bring the flashlight though?
Probably, just
because Wayne gets to hang because he brought the flashlight that nobody remembered to bring.
Yeah, I find Wayne interesting because he's not like a nerd archetype. He is clearly into sports because he loves counting yardage as if he's a football player.
Yeah, he loves running and voiceovering himself like a lot of kids do. It's a great classic.
But he's like a dorky fat kid, and then he knows like random tidbits. So he's kind of just a grab bag of a person.
Chad, knowing about sports does not make you not a nerd.
No, but in TV rules, I feel like that defies most of the tropes.
Yeah, that makes him count as a complex character almost. Just like he can't be like, it gives him nuance. It's cool.
Yeah. Wayne's great. Well, I noticed at one point, Big Pete as a narrator refers to this group as the Nightcrawlers.
Yeah.
Which they're not.
They aren't, which is weird.
Stolen valor.
Pete's the only original Nightcrawler there. Maybe Nona was there.
Maybe Nona.
I don't think
Nightcrawler was Nightcrawlers season on one. A previous episode.
I know. But I'm just like, I don't know. Maybe she was in the background. Maybe Monica was there.
No, I'm looking it up right now. There's a girl who's from The Princess Diaries. She was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And like other kids we've never seen, but Nona did not exist yet. It was a season one episode. Including a kid from Heavyweights, other actors who went on to other things but are not in the rest of the show.
Maybe the Nightcrawlers are just Pete's gang. And if you're in Pete's gang, you're a Nightcrawler. Maybe that's
how they were crawling through the night, so maybe that's enough to make you a Nightcrawler.
That's good. Let's give it to him. I think it's
fair. So it's like maybe, or it's like a Guns N' Roses where it's like Axel just kind of keeps giving the name to him and his friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chad, while you have IMDb open, do you know if Wayne ever did anything else?
Oh, great. I looked up Pitt Stain. He stopped acting in 2002. I was very curious.
Good for him.
He got out.
Bless him.
He got out.
let me get back to you.
Justin Restivo, a.k.a. Wayne the Pain, was in Dirty Grandpa as an additional crew. So he's still working. He's still in the industry. He's not so much acting.
Working behind the scenes.
Oh, wait, no. He is still acting. He was in a TV series called Bull. I don't know.
Bull?
He was in Bull.
Bull!
So Wayne has the flashlight. Nona has the lunch. And
I love the flashlight. It's the Krebs Star. I don't know if it was the Krebs Star 1000. It was just the Krebs Star flashlight. But he describes it as having a frog man on the box that's using it at 1,000 feet of water, which means almost nothing to me. But also, it's so incredibly evocative that it means everything.
Yeah. You can trust that flashlight.
Yep.
As long as you remember to, you know, pack fresh batteries.
If it works for a frogman, it works for me.
Good enough for a frogman. Good enough
for me. I understand the appreciation of a good heavy duty flashlight and that making you feel like Thor with his hammer as a kid. I do understand that.
That's very 90s too, is like the technology that's like rated for depth, like the watch that can go 1,000 feet underwater.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very silly.
We haven't mentioned that now that Pitt Stain is on Little Pete's trail, because he's like, I will get to the coin first. and steal Pete's luck so that I could just pound him all the time on, yeah. on bait. He has two interesting, I think, lackeys. Yep. You know, the
like kind of low level but named Batman goon.
The saber tooth and Mystique to his Magneto, maybe.
Right. Yeah, he has hairnet and drawstring.
Hairnet and drawstring.
The fun thing is that they're not named until the end of the third act, which is really an interesting thing because they're shown multiple times. In fact, they're shown while Pit Stain is working out his plan to be dropping bowling balls on toy frogs in a swimming pool, in a child swimming pool.
Yeah, and he says, "I'll get Wrigley's luck and he'll be Crispy Duck. Hey guys, I made a rhyme," and they just clap politely.
They're great little characters. When we get their
names, that's good goons.
They're good goons. They have they have good nicknames. Hairnet wears a hairnet. Drawstring has a hoodie, which he pulls closed.
I like whenever we see Pit Stain and his goons, they're always kind of Wes Anderson posed.
Yes. Oh, there's so much Wes Anderson in this show.
Like, they're always, like, super constructed. Like, Pit Stain is, like, in the foreground and, like, the goons are in the background or something like that. Or they're on different levels when they're eating lunch. Like, it's always, like, really hyper-constructed stuff, and I love it.
I love what I think you're picking up in this episode about the Wes Anderson vibes. It's like, for instance, when they set out on the journey to retrieve the coin, the shot opens up on a tall grass field in New Jersey, right? But it's constructed in a way, one, through being in a 4-3 aspect ratio for standard definition television, but the way that he brings Pete into the shot where he walks into the left third of the frame in this very well-constructed straight-on shot, and then he speaks into the frame and then walks into the shot, and then he's followed by his night crawlers. Is just a very, like, Wes Anderson way to approach that shot, right?
All they have is a camera. Like, that's it. Like, that's the only, that's, like, the most, like, twist they can put on anything is at least the camera work can be good.
Yeah, it is, this one's great because I would say 2/3 of this episode is shot in the woods. And as I was watching it, I was actually really kind of getting nostalgic for a video that I made with Nick Murphy and Chad. Chad, you were tangentially involved. You got us the opportunity, our Spooky Squad episode. Because having shot something in the woods, you really don't have a lot to work with in terms of set design, right? You really, your characters become the props.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't tell Dom to start punching trees down to make space if you need
to. That was one of my favorite gags in that. It's a great episode because I think they do 100% have to rely upon
character acting and camera work
and the props. Like I was saying, the props are the characters, and using them to stage scenes, like you were saying with the goons. Like if it were just Pit Stain following them, the possibilities, and maybe that is why they gave him two goons, was just to have something around him to make the scenes more interesting looking.
Yeah, because like there's that scene where Nona like forgets the lunch or whatever, forgets like the little unicorn lunchbox, and she's like, "Well, you guys wouldn't like it anyway." And then there's this cut to Pit Stain and his goons eating like a full turkey and lobster and
a wedding cake,
a multi-tiered wedding cake.
It's a very funny joke.
Nothing that could possibly fit in a little lunchbox, but it's great. It's such a cute little gag, and it's funny to see. It's funny to see the bad guys like win, like because you know just because Pete's unlucky in this episode, so like the B plot kind of has to be around like these. Not exactly charming, just like interesting weirdo bad guys.
Yeah, it's a really fun episode. I think, like we were saying, the story seams are showing a little bit. I think the weaknesses of some missing characters are showing, but I think they're doing a lot, and probably with a much less than they typically had, right? Because I'm assuming this third season is shorter. And I'm assuming the budget was massively cut for this one as well.
I think it was the same length as two.
Oh, was
but
it?
It's
okay.
Kind of hard to determine.
Man, I gotta say, going back and looking at season one, they're so much younger. It is wild.
Yeah, there were big gaps in between.
Kevin,
seasons.
You're right. They are 13 episodes in season two and three.
Man, can you imagine 13 episodes in a season?
Can you imagine?
It's a beautiful number.
It's tough.
So our crew fights and then they make up and then they make it to the tracks.
Yeah, but in the fight they do lose the Viper.
The Viper is never replaced.
The Viper is never replaced, and I believe that some of Nona's lucky items are lost in that fight, right? Or does she lose them along the way?
She loses the lunch.
She gives up her necklace.
Yeah, she gives up the necklace to make peace with Monica.
Mm-hmm. Yet she offers it to her to eat, in which she says that the yellow ones, quote, taste like summer.
Yeah.
Just another beautiful little evocative moment.
And a good line for Michelle Trachtenberg.
Agreed. And a great delivery. Congratulations.
Well, I hope she lives a good long life, that Nona.
Death to none of them.
Death to none of them.
Everyone lives. They're lost, and Wayne tries to run home, and he just runs them straight to the tracks, which is great. And then we get the hairnet drawstring reveal, and there's finally a face-off between Pete and Pit Stains. Like, Pit Stains is trying to stop Pete from getting the penny off the tracks. The train is coming, big and climactic. The train runs over the penny, and the flattened penny flips up, and there are two hands stretched out waiting for the penny to fall into it, Pit Stain and Little Pete, and it falls into Little Pete's hand.
The luck is back, baby.
The look is back, and then Pete gets decked in the stomach, and Pit Stain's about to punch him even more when bus driver Stu Benedict appears and puts him under bus driver arrest.
In a very funny visual of, it seems that he just drove the bus through the forest and is parked alongside the train tracks.
Yeah,
honestly, maybe impressive from a production standpoint to get that bus there.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of camera trickery happening here.
Oh, there's a great, well, the train is a great moment. I'm fairly certain the train is a toy train, right?
Oh yeah, I
didn't,
it's hard
think
to tell
it.
with noggin.com quality.
Yeah, I have the episode open, and I couldn't, it stopped scanning when I was looking, but I'm fairly certain at least one shot and it looked to me to be a model train.
I thought it did well. Like, it was very quick, and you didn't have long. I don't know why, like, whenever there's bad CG, it's always there long enough for me to realize it's bad CG. But if it's like a quick model shot, I never notice.
Good models used in special effects, always a fan. Always a fan.
Models are always better, as we saw in the Lord of the Rings movies, in which they were used to great effect. I actually don't know. I think there are some shots that look as if they are a real train. But I feel like there's like one shot that really felt like it was a model train. The very first shot as the train comes out, and I don't want to play it because they will destroy your ears. Let me see if I can turn the volume off. Okay, I've got it muted. I'm playing right now.
All right, he's playing it.
I'm going back. We're at if you want a time code, it's at 2020.
She's looking at it. You can type anything to your YouTube search bar.
It actually is not the.
That's a real train.
It is not the first shot of the train. It's actually the second shot. I think it is a real train, Chad. I think you're right.
Wow.
I think they got a cameraman in front of there and just made him risk his life.
Wow.
Yeah, those kids were definitely standing and wrestling next to the actual train as it came by.
And so the train comes by. It hits the lucky coin. And empowered by fully charged luck powers, it goes straight flying into Pit Stain's throat and kills him instantly.
Yeah. He's beheaded, and it's magic bullet style. It pops right back out.
And the Nick execs come down and say, Pete and Pete is the greatest show we've ever created. Give this as many seasons as they would like, and a movie.
We probably talk about this every time, but you'd have to fundamentally change everything about TV to ever see this again. You wouldn't even see a YouTube series that's like this.
Well, we tried.
this whole episode, as someone who is often given notes on my writing of like, oh, well, we can't have repeatable behavior. Mm-hmm. Kids can't do things. Or even the joke where, the Cub Scout girl is pretend stabbing at them with Viper with the blade not even drawn.
Yes, yeah. I thought about that too, Chad.
Would never be able to do that now.
Because there'd be too many stabbed kids.
There'd be too many stabbed kids going, which is, I don't know, what, you think kids are like, let's go out and recreate our favorite episodes of Pete and Pete. You be Pete, I'll be the Girl Scout. I'm going to pretend to stab you.
He was named once.
He was named once. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's just you don't want to get sued. They don't that yeah. whatever they could do to not get sued, they'll do it.
It's just that they're cowards.
The sheer fact that I believe actually putting things on a train track is illegal.
It is.
And whether or not it'll actually dismantle a train, I can't tell. I've seen
it's not good for the train. I'll tell you this much. It's not. Yeah? It's not how trains were not meant to run over pennies constantly. So.
Quarters, yes. Pennies, no. It's the copper that freaks them
yeah,
out.
Yeah. I grew up on the train tracks. In fact, pretty much everywhere I live, I've been close to train tracks. And my dirtbag friends as children would leave many things on the tracks, and the penny never was flattened like it was in Pete and Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like a professional like penny flattening device.
Yeah, they smelted that.
That's one of those tourism devices that you run through the crank and it gives you a fun picture on it.
Yeah. We just kind of couldn't find the pennies afterwards. So
you're lucky you didn't find them inside of your body like a bullet.
So we just went back to throwing rocks at windows.
Good old dirtbag behavior.
Or throw rocks at trains, you know?
That's not illegal.
Not if you're an 8-year-old child. It's not illegal. So there's a nice little denouement at the end of this where Pete is thankful for the friends who are around him. He says, thanks for standing by me.
Which was a nice little line that throw even in though there.
This isn't super like... It has elements of Stand By Me in there. It's kids.
Oh, yeah.
It's kids on a train track, which is always going to be compared to Stand By Me.
Of course.
It not only has elements of Stand By Me, it for some reason, Pitstain was really giving me Stephen King It vibes of like, this is the kid that Pennywise sends on a murder rampage to get the losers somehow.
You know the part in Pokemon Blue where it references Stand By Me?
Wait,
what are you talking about?
So at the very beginning of Pokemon Blue, you can look at the TV mm-hmm. and it says it's a movie where kids are on rail.
Oh, I think I knew that. Yes.
Train tracks. I guess I should hit the road, too. I thought they were referencing Pete and Pete.
Wow.
Because I didn't see Stand By Me until Paul and I watched Stand By Me.
But you know what, Kevin? In a way, they were. And that's cool. It's all through the continuum of art.
Wow.
Through the continuum of art, they referenced it. They referenced Pete and Pete and Stand By Me at the same time.
The railway tracks of Stand By Me stretch cross media.
And cross oceans.
Yeah.
There's always a train track.
There's always a lighthouse.
There's always a lucky penny.
And then Pete decides he doesn't need the penny anymore because he's got friends. And then when he realizes what idiots his friends are.
Yeah. It's great because it's an incredibly un-Pete like moment. Pete has truly lost everything that is Pete about him in this moment until, like you said, Kevin... He makes a quick 180, goes back, and grabs the coin.
I love the line, there are some things you need more than luck. Like, that like really hit me this time for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But Pete going back to get the penny is like, but a little luck is nice. Like, I like it. It's a nice little, it keeps it from being too serious.
A little too saccharine, right?
Yeah.
And it's also nice because it's Wayne Pardue. Yeah. Is talking about the order in which they will sleep over each other's houses. And I think Pete is recognizing he might need a little luck to survive with Wayne for a couple of nights in a row.
It's good. It's great. It's silly stuff.
It ends with a very nice, I think, Polaris track. We were looking at the end credits, and Kevin found that the magnetic fields were credited on this one.
Yeah, I don't know if... Like you said, Paul, I don't know if this was maybe like a cross-season credit to the Magnetic Fields or what. Additional music by the Magnetic Fields, Nice and Drop 19s. Don't know who most of those are, but that's cool. Also,
aren't the Magnetic Fields like a popular band? Like
Yeah,
they're huge.
Polaris is a popular band.
Well, I mean, yeah, but like, yeah.
They did the music for Pete and Pete.
But Polaris was made for Pete and Pete, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's also a popular band.
Polaris is novelty music, Kevin.
Oh, no. The things I like are not respected. Chad, you saw a name in the credits that like connects your work to Pete and Pete right?
Yeah, I'm very confused. Two ways I can say. In the last year, I worked on a project that probably won't ever come out with Will McRobb, the creator of the show.
Oh, that's right. I think you told us that. Yeah.
But which was very, I wanted to talk about Pete and Pete and never did. Sorry not to have any cool insights to share with you. But then at the end of the credits, there was special thanks to a Margie Cohen, who I think is supposed to be my former executive boss on Troll Hunters, who is the head of DreamWorks right now.
Wow.
But her name, I think, was misspelled in the credits.
Without an A.
Unless there's a Marjorie Cohn out there, which could
yeah,
be.
Well, the Marjorie Cohn, who is head of DreamWorks, did have her initial early credits as a production assistant on Double Dare and Clarissa Explains It All.
Oh.
So it would make so she was working at Nickelodeon in the late 1980s, early 1990s. I could buy that she had some sort of special thanks credit on P&P for working on it, but also that she was a young PA, so they didn't get her name right, is what I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she wasn't even a PA.
She could have been thanked specially.
Yeah. Maybe she made the snowballs.
I was going to say maybe she flattened the coin.
Maybe she flattened the coin. She had to run to a Cracker Barrel and like get it made just for that.
Just crank it. Crank it with all her might.
Crank it when I get back. We'll reimburse you a per diem for the mileage.
Can I get one without a bear or a duck or a deer on it?
And hey, listen, that just goes to show you got to start somewhere. You can be a PA doing runs for Pete and Pete, and in a couple decades, you'll be running Boss Baby.
Wow.
Life is good.
Life is good.
There's only one direction.
Upward.
Yeah.
is that our Pete and Pete review?
Yeah. Every time we do a Pete and Pete episode, I know it is a reprieve. It's a little reload, recharge moment for me, at least.
It's a beautiful show. It's so thoughtful. It's the humor in it I find to be very funny, and I think it's just really well directed. It's a tasteful show.
My time with film was very brief, but I really like doing film. I've never been a great camera operator, but I liked doing it. And whenever I see like the handcrafted nature of Pete and Pete, I'm always like, I kind of want to just like get out there with a digital camera and film something.
Yeah, it's not too late.
It always strikes me, like, for instance, the shot with the snowball. Shots like that are just like, this is extremely low budget, like you're saying, Kevin, it's going out with your friends and figuring out how to take care of the shots. Probably they didn't probably do a day of this is an actual production. Yeah. But it has that feeling of like, oh, what if we do it this way? And then you come up with the method, and then you just execute it in the cheapest, most practical way possible. And it's so you can it oozes that charm.
Yeah, it's just like, what is the script but a list of problems that we have to solve with a camera somehow?
Yes.
And then just taking them one by one. Like, how do we make that first scene with Pete really dramatic? Why don't we hit it at, like, golden hour while he's walking up the staircase?
It's finding those little magical moments of childhood, right? It's like, everybody remembers when your house glowed once a day, right? And, like, my house still glows every day that way. But I don't see it as much because I'm a little more trapped in my adult head. But but as a child, those moments hit you really hard. And they made things feel a little bit bigger and more important than they probably were at the time.
And as a filmmaker, you kind of look for those moments. Like you're tuned to them. You're
right.
Looking for like, that would make a good shot. Like that could use that. Like this could all, I can use all of this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really fun. I think it turns like life into a little bit of a scavenger hunt.
Agreed.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. Hey, if you think we should do more Pete and Pete, or if you have other things you want us to cover besides returning to R.L. Stine's Fear Street and Horrorland books, you can support the show and guide our minds.
Guide the mind.
Guide our minds and our critiques and our voices over at patreon.com/goosebuds. Your support keeps the show running, and you get to vote on what we're covering next. You also get bonus episodes of Camp Goosebudge, which is like the banter at the start of this episode. But for an entire episode, you get a free bonus one every month with your pledge. There are dozens and dozens of Camp Goosebudge episodes to go back and listen to. All funny, all good times.
I think at least like 7 years of Camp Goosebudge episodes or something like that.
That's its own other podcast.
Yeah. That you can get for $1 or $5 or some amount of dollars.
$5. And then
$5.
Yeah. You also get immortalized in the book of names at the end of this episode as a way of saying thank you.
For 7,000 hours of podcast.
Yeah.
Think about it. Think about the savings.
You guys got anything you want to send people to check out?
I was just going to say, we were recommended. Erie, Indiana was one of the ways that our minds were being persuaded via our Discord. I was just looking to see if I could find who recommended it, and I could not find the name, but I know someone recently recommended it, and I do believe that's one we're going to check out. So if there's shows along those lines, the Erie, Indianas of the world, let us know. Join our Discord and by joining our Patreon and let us know.
Patreon.com/goosebuds.
Patreon.com/goosebuds.
Also, givekevinmoney.com.
Also, givekevinmoney.com. Also, it's November. If you've got a nerd in your life and you need to get that nerd a Christmas present, maybe get them the Space Kings book. If you order your Space Kings book this month, it'll probably get to your place in time for Christmas. Or holiday, or whatever the heck's going on. Buy a Space Kings book. It's a good RPG. I wrote it.
Get it for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's a good time to play some games.
Make your family that you can't talk to about politics, make them play Space Kings.
Yeah, see what's lurking behind their eyes. Like, see what creativity still burns within them. And maybe you'll like what you see.
Awaken their golden hours within them.
Go to spacekings.space, or better yet, book.spacekings.space for the hardcover full color version of the Space Kings book. It's good. I don't know what to tell you, man. It's fun stuff.
it's an amazing game. Also check out Pretend Friends.
We're trying to help you buy the book.
Please don't do this.
We don't know what else to say. You can have it right now.
You can just, it's all you need is money. We'll ship it anywhere in the world. If you don't see your country on the book site, then just send me an email and I'll get it to you. It'll be all right.
Hey, also, if you want other cool stuff for the holidays besides Space Kings, you can go to our Etsy store, Goosebuds, and get some of our cool merch. People sometimes might think you're wearing Goosebumps merch, which is also cool, even if they don't know the podcast.
Then you can correct them, and they can shrink away in disgust.
Drive them away from the podcast.
That's the real prize.
I think that's it for the episode, y'all. Thank you again for listening, and Paul and Kevin, I'll see you next time.
We love you all. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody. This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our supporters in the Book of Names.
The Book of Names.
We'd like to thank these Patreon donors, like Stefan Jive Turkey Kuwabara,
Hollis Hornbeak,
Low Belly Hate Me,
Cameron Murphy Audio,
Michael McDowell,
Hey Josh Rob,
Mickey C,
Nathan Dolezal,
Mike Lanteri,
Buddy Morrill,
Alicade,
Mel Dipson,
Afshin,
Dango Twists,
Zenta Bumps,
Stealth Bates,
Robert Moon,
Brian Wells,
Jason Crooker,
Clay Castle,
Miguel Pardo,
John Keaty,
Calf.
Great news, Paranoia Shop just signed a $69 million deal with Spotify.
Oh god, I missed out on all that money.
The Juggalobalist,
Gregory D. Warren,
Cody Redfield,
Bradford Coulter.
Aiden prays that ice worshippers get fat stacks. Yeah.
Well, with that $69 million Spotify payout, you certainly did, Chad.
Prosperity Gospel!
Jar Jar Slinks.
Chosen One.
Levi Than.
Up and Champ.
Jonas Engman.
Carl.
Anthony Mulberry.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Elusive Koala.
Yanni Markovina.
Brooke X.
Jesus Christ.
Christian Van Skeever.
Drew Applegate.
Jeremy Lowe.
Brian Hobgood.
Zach Connor.
Patreon.com/DonatorComedyO.
Joe Spooky Digital Ghost Tierney.
Tom Whittem.
Andrew Jadzak just saw a Frostbiterians flyer. Come learn about the real truth of Kelvinist Absolute Zero. Light, frigid, refreshed.
All right.
A lot to take in there, Jads. We're going to have to read that one again for a couple months, I think.
Yeah, are they a splinter group? Are they us? I don't understand. Tell me more.
Lord Cornwallis.
Carson Birkenbean.
Murphy P.
Sean Minogue.
Tevin Ticklebean has a sock of loose eggs.
Are they boiled or are they just raw?
They're loose.
They're loose. They're not in the carton, at least. Rushy Glenn.
Wiggle it.
Luke LaFontaine.
Alicia Grafe.
Chip Handsome.
Matt McClellan.
Tanya Turtle.
Juan Jalapena.
Keith Halcrow.
Timothy Misudelakis.
Clay McCarty.
Parker Lee, you can do it.
Sarah Kemp.
Jonas Blatterman.
Hold on, there's a cat blocking my computer. Ham underscore boat.
Raymond Hernandez.
They're crow fans, but seasonal.
Matthew Sutton. Sorry, there's a cat still blocking my
computer. Hootie, get out of there. Jeffrey Owen Cahey.
I'm going to be cool uncle. Hootie, do whatever you want. Kelsey Kinneman.
She's going to.
Hootie, do drugs.
She's doing them. Russell Casper.
Xavier Jimenez Castillo.
Chris Putrakis.
Scotty Pippen.
Alex Moon, the robotic dog.
Flemily.
Paul Grasso, believe in yourself.
Joe, regular name. Scott.
Dungeon Kappa, get a 401k.
Wow. Tobias Clark.
Ice Acolyte Hamster turns his cup of ice lava down.
Yes.
But it's ice lava, so isn't it ice?
Shit, I don't know what ice lava is.
Made you think. I think it's like a slushy.
Crap. Limp Duck.
Meat Virginia?
Luke Noodles.
Hugh Bolin.
Zambambino.
Estamina, Lord of Paul's Pants.
Chris, Spooky Gym Shorts and a 4XL t-shirt, Stiffy Nelson.
Woo. Damn.
Streak.
Nathan Remick.
Need More Kimchi.
Kieran McNamara.
Diet Soda.
Lee Wood.
Lamb.
Jackie Ledoux.
Coleman Laguza.
Reed Stupendieck.
A Pair of Scots.
Joey Evans.
Levi Kidder. Achieve.
Getting Nasty in the Wastebasket. I like that.
David Gray.
Carewise Gamgee.
Bryce Deary.
Matthew Brittato.
A Wild Swaggy YOLO Squire appears.
Cameron Hansen.
Tacky Tammy. Success.
Ma, the meatloaf.
You nailed the Will Ferrell there. Help, I'm trapped in the weird vent that Paul's mom's cat was trapped in. I can't get out.
I love that I know this is a British person's name that they put in.
Paul's mom.
Mums.
Mom's cat. Mom's cat.
Well, we closed off the vent, so sorry, you're stuck in there forever.
It's been sealed.
Jonas Annevoldsen.
B-b-b-bony.
Generally depressing.
The Deadly Bulb graduates.
Some of Chad's bird friends now live in the rafters of Ice Church. Thank you, Chad's bird friend children.
Come on down there. Come on down. Joe Gorman.
Ben Bohan.
Burgers overturned cup, parentheses boiling, double parentheses free the entity.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about the entity, but I do believe in melting the ice.
Nicholas Maloney.
Eric Horwitz.
Tiffany Lee.
Thomas Jansis.
Anthony skips straight to the Book of Names.
Whoa.
Fuck yeah.
Lucretia McEvil.
Mutant Astronaut.
Henry Torbert. Text your mom.
Calamity Carl. Have a wonderful day.
Germ Juice. Call your girlfriend.
Whoa.
It's a Robin song.
Oh. I guess, yeah. Yeah.
Beauregard Epsilon Hamilton, a.k.a. Hambone, host of Radio Bone Air. Don't fucking tell me what to do. That's another reference to Robin.
Adam Knapp.
Nick Johnson.
Logan Derby.
Brad Schmelzer.
Chick.
Ryan Carroll. Come pick me up. It's for Wendy's.
Jeremy Bowser. You can do it. You can get your license.
Callum, Mr. Misfire West. You put that gun away.
No misfires today, neither for you, Mandy Nasty.
Skeletorin, keep it up.
Dr. Diarrhea, keep those pants on.
Megan McCormick Mason, love your spices.
Ninja Bread Man.
Yoplin.
Philip Reynolds.
Helodicus Frenchlin.
Aaron Lord.
Nate Bit G, keep on drawing.
Dr. Chalk.
Boss Garrison, let the hostages go.
Mr. Unimportant wants to know if you can pee on the Ice Church floor. Only if your pee's hot.
Only in a certain corner.
Ryan R. Davis, you have 72 hours to comply.
Scott Wavell, you're close. Give them to me.
Rocco.
Omega Bagel, a.k.a. Omega Bagel, a.k.a. George, a.k.a. Josh.
Hi, Josh.
Keep on zelding.
Robot Arita.
Evdog.
SSJ Trugdor.
Llama Lad.
Greg Musteau.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Hi, first time, long time.
Allie Rose.
Sprinkle Buns.
Hilda B.
Chris.
Liam Rogers.
Steve Buscemi, fueled by gas station sandwiches and erasure mixtapes, plays Dota 2 Tidehunter only. Oh my god, he's gonna hit that alt. He's gonna hit that alt and stun everyone for 6 seconds. It's big play. That's all you can really do is Tidehunter.
Big play Buscemi, that's what we call him. Ollie _ Suts.
Kate the Great.
Mike Hart.
Soggy Newspapers.
Chris Kulik.
Dakota Kemp.
John W.
Cassandra Harris.
Gulliver.
Saturn Video.
That last name was my favorite.
Big Nick Lane.
Kira and Brian are big fans.
Kiwi of Lerv.
Serial Killer X.
Wade Norcross.
Blake Cavan.
Dan Antonio.
Kit Bush.
Sarah Ernie.
Sarah Sin.
Dennis Wright.
Joe the Moon.
Oh boy.
Goblin Grader tests the character count as a public service to all 69, 72, 75, 78, 81, 84, 87, 90, 93, 96, 99, 103, 107, 111, 115, 119, 123, 127.
Woo! It's Baby. A 128 character limit.
Jesse.
Cameron Ganseveld.
I feel used. Chris Curto.
Cole Gleason.
Several upset horses.
Jesse Boggs.
Michael Malloy.
Matt Septor.
Greg Gervasi, a.k.a. Vitizen. I'm tired of people saying that's not what that is.
Kyle O'Neill.
I called it when Nick Murphy called it. Tonight at 11.
Anthony Rodriguez.
B.
Goon Cahoots saw Undertaker at Walgreens. What was he buying?
How are you still alive?
We forgot to change our Patreon name for a while, but Jeff Webb, parentheses big baby, and I still appreciate all the ongoing bits in the buh.
In the buh.
In the butt.
You see, this is why Goblin Grader did that public service for everyone.
Just Alpaca Queens.
Traku, the thing that goes doink in the anime.
Doink. Doink. Anthony Stoker.
Brony _Danza.
Tanier Hyde.
Spencer Y.
Wunderskin.
Max, Schism Advocate, pledges his cup facing upward, yes.
Thank you, Schism Child.
Thank you, Schism Child.
Feels down for the schism. You're welcome. Dog Lips _ Kajoyan.
Wunderskin again.
Hey, what's going on with you, Wunderskin?
Bjarne?
Paul Sentient My Buddy Doll, a.k.a. the real Mr. Bad Boy.
I'm a bad boy.
Her, a.k.a. Cyber Bully.
Chris and the Canine Conundrum.
Greb Comics.
Barbin.
Talen McKnight got married to Ross, not from Friends McKnight.
Oh, congratulations. Congrats. What a royal wedding. Logan Kilgus.
Bosferatu.
Starship 9.
Kumquat Behavior Podcast.
Proper Spaceman.
Canadian Ghoul.
Angelo Edward Longton Santone.
Smellities.
R.I.P. Chad Quant, his paranoia didn't save him from being hunted by troll prodigies in the wizard Shop.
I like it. It's really encompassing my entire life and death. Elodie.
Caleb Snyder, grandmaster of spells and enchantments, pledges his wizard staff and ancient tome to Paul.
Thank you, Tome Child.
Good dear kid.
Agents Miskatonic.
Lumo Nuva.
Brian Udath.
Julius the Nice Dragon.
Ooh.
Nail 7.
A tall glass of dumb bitch juice.
Nowhere Lucas.
Brian Storrow.
CL Reagan pledges his ice church tithes to Chad.
Thank you, Reagan. Thank you for your Fall Out Boy love. Ben Fleoios Sire.
A valiant attempt, Chad. Justin.
Gumblegore.
Bob Cabbage.
Shayna S.
Jaybird, you're on the right track.
And welcome to the Book of Names, John Farrington.
Hello and well met, Jolly O'Jules. Let us know where you fall on the schism lines.
Oh my god, we've attracted the attention of the number one gnome.
The number one gnome. Welcome and welcome to the Book of Names, Nat Noah. Thank you all so much.
You're our eternal roommates forever.
Goodbye. I love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.